Welcome to Holistic Wisdom, where we explore collaborative insights for a healthier world. We will bring together voices from many paths and wisdom keepers from diverse traditions. Each episode is a conversation at the crossroads of science and the natural world. Together, we explore what it truly means to thrive in a healthier environment. Whether you're here to learn, unlearn, or simply reconnect, Holistic Wisdom invites you into a space of curiosity, healing, and possibility. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Holistic Wisdom. I am your host, Margie Weathers. We seek to find new and alternative solutions to better health and the health of our planet. And to that end, I interview people from all different health traditions. Everyone has a similar approach and a different approach. To that end, I today am welcoming Dr. Mitya Shoppe. Dr. Mitya Shoppe is a nationally board certified traditional Chinese medicine and acupuncturist. And you are located in the Upper Valley, Lebanon, New Hampshire. And the name of your clinic is the Connecticut River Valley Acupuncture, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Let's just jump in and talk about what is traditional Chinese medicine.
Traditional Chinese medicine is the medicine that was developed in Asia, you know, in the East. I think the earliest records of acupuncture being applied are about 3,000 years old, right? It was the doctors for the people for all of those centuries. And it was almost lost with the big political shifts in China away from more traditional aspects when they were really trying to embrace modern medicine and technology. But then it was brought back because they realized that they couldn't address the needs of many communities with these big hospitals. So they started developing some barefoot doctors, and then they really came together to, because a lot of books were burned during that whole revolution. But when the People's Republic of China was created, they really just brought it all together and started to consolidate the knowledge. And it's still a very much alive medicine today, involved in research and integrated hospitals in China of both Western and Eastern.
So when that, so 3,000 years ago, and when was it adopted into other countries, do you think, into the United States?
So it's the foundation of traditional Japanese, Korean, I mean, almost all of Asia. It was the foundation of a lot of developed like five element theory, which is a theoretical foundation for those concepts of yin and yang and qi and blood and the treatment modalities you will see all across Asia. It wasn't really when the Chinese came to the continent for working on the railways and inhabiting parts of California, in large part, they were practicing. It was here, but it really wasn't introduced to the United States until, what is it, 1954? There was that diplomatic mission to China. And the story goes that during that mission, one of the presidential secretaries came down with acute appendicitis and was taken to the hospital and was treated not only with surgery, but also with acupuncture. And he was so impressed, and the press picked up on it and they started writing about it. And that was really the beginning of some interest. In the 70s, there was a clinic in Harlem, in New York City, that took on ear acupuncture and developed NADA, which is a treatment protocol of just auricular acupuncture for drug rehabilitation. That's gone on to be heavily studied. Mm-hmm. It was primarily heroin addiction. Mm. And it was when the early substitute drugs were being introduced, and the people in the clinic who were recovering from heroin addiction were really wary of these other medications that were being offered through the clinic. And so they were looking for other opportunities. And one of the directors of the program found out about ear acupuncture and then went on to bring it into the clinic and study it. And they found it so incredibly helpful in addressing anxiety and depression and insomnia and withdrawal symptoms that it became.
So,
So these are areas where acupuncture started to make inroads as a treatment in the United States.
And isn't it interesting that heroin addicts were leery of another drug, right? And they had gotten to the point where they, I don't think any heroin addict wants to be an addict, but when they're faced with withdrawing from that, they become acutely aware of how drugs are affecting their bodies. And how cool is it that they said, wait a minute, we want to look at another alternative. So would auricular therapy, is that what you call it? Would that replace methadone?
Yes.
Wow,
Yep. It
that's
would. Yeah.
amazing.
Acupuncture particularly can work as an excellent adjunct to a lot of Western treatment, right? You have an acute appendicitis, you want the surgery, right? Because it can kill you. And the surgery, this is what Western medicine is so great at. But then you need to recover from that surgery. You need to recover from the infection and the trauma that came with it. And that's where acupuncture can be wonderful. And for some people, methadone is necessary. Methadone is more addictive than heroin. So if you ever want to come off of it, you may need help there. But regular acupuncture work to smooth out the whole process, relieving symptoms along the way so that people could be on a lower dose. No. Or none at all.
So yeah, it's interesting.
Okay.
1971.
That
Okay. So we experienced, and I actually don't know what the year was, but we were in the United States, we practiced, I don't know what you would call it, but more homegrown medicine. Doctors were using herbal herbs and food for medicine. Along came the Carnegies and the Rockefellers and said, hey, we can make money at this. Not to get too political, but they took over and sort of pushed away these alternative medicine modalities and really turned us against it and made us believe that this was quackery. And so now we've come back around, obviously. And so I guess my question is, how is it accepted today in America? Do you feel that acupuncture has really made much bigger inroads?
I think it's made inroads with people, with the population, right? We know that, coming out of the 60s and 70s, with just this greater awareness of it, sort of that whole health and wellness aspect. I mean, some for better or worse, right? Fad diets, not so great. But, the internet is really a part of what has made it possible because people can get information so much more readily. Again, for better or worse, because there's a lot of self-treating. And I'll have people come in who are on supplements for, and they're not even sure why, or, they'll say, oh, well, I was taking this for my heartburn. I'm like, well, do you have heartburn? They're like, yes. I was like, so is it helping? And they're like, not really. I'm like, so why are you taking it? One of the things that I really love about Chinese medicine is that it is customized to the person. You're looking for that body's pattern, the pattern in health and then also in illness. And then you're using herbs, acupuncture, to correct into a healthier pattern.
So, would you say that traditional Chinese medicine is herbal treatments, acupuncture? So, acupuncture is a part of traditional Chinese medicine. It's not separate.
I got my doctorate in acupuncture and Chinese medicine. I'm a Chinese medicine doctor. So even though my licensing is acupuncture, my training is in Chinese medicine. And Chinese medicine, the master physician, something you aspire to, practices the five branches. So five branches are primary that we think about is the acupuncture and then herbs, but it's also nutrition and manual therapies, which is Chinese medical massage, Tuina, same thing, and cupping, people may be familiar with. And then the last being Tai Chi, Qigong, or some kind of
Movement.
physical exercise and movement, right? So I might recommend to somebody that they do certain movements to benefit their back or shoulder digestion.
Or just their general health. They don't necessarily have to have anything that is really acute.
Chinese medicine, never confirmed this, but I believe historically the doctor in the village was supported by the community. And so it was only if people did not get well that they didn't get,
Paid,
right?
right. I've read that. I learned that too. That they were paid to keep you, prevent
Healthy.
illness.
So it's all based on this idea of preventative medicine. There's different diagnostics in Chinese medicine, and the two of the main ones that we do are pulses and tongue, which give us a lot of information about the person. So you take the tongue pulse and the questions, put it together, and you come up with this pattern diagnosis. Everybody has one. In the classics, they'll talk about the master physician treats what is coming down the line, not just
Interesting.
what's present at the moment.
How somebody could have figured out way back when, 3,000 years ago, that there were these channels of energy in the body and how they mapped them. I mean, it's mind-boggling to think about that. And oh, well, if we put these needles in here, we can open up these channels. But, I call it divine intervention, I think, because somebody comes up with, somebody says, hey, there's a better way to do this, right? So many questions. Let's talk about, so
Can
diet.
I speak to that though?
Yes, absolutely, of
Keep
course.
that question, whatever it was. But
Yeah.
I love thinking back to the origin of things. I always wonder who ate the first blue cheese, right? Like this.
And who ate the first artichoke?
What were the circumstances, right? And what were they thinking? But I believe, in Chinese medicine, it has this, when we talk about 3,000 years ago, it was very different than now. When they saw somebody have seizures, they referred to it as spirits, and they were,
Eat.
trying to, but our bodies, our environment has changed a lot, but our bodies haven't changed much in millennia. It happens every day in the clinic where I will, do an acupuncture point on the foot, and people say, "Oh, that shot up to my thigh." And they're exactly describing the liver channel, right? Those channels or meridians, pathways of, and energy, I'll just energy is such a flat translation of the word qi. Qi is so much more dynamic as a concept. It is the movement, is the motive force, it's the action in our body behind everything, whether it's neurotransmitters or hormonal movements, blood flow, right, is he moving the blood through the vessels. So anyway, I like to bring that up. Because I think a lot can be lost in translation.
Absolutely. So here's a question. What is the Western equivalent to qi?
The fundamental difference between Chinese medicine and Western medicine is that Western medicine is reductionist. It is always taking things down to its further and further, down in it to its
Specialist.
parts, down to the molecule, right? And I remember when I was in nursing school and I took anatomy and physiology, one of the tests was, they'd put a bone down on the table and they'd be like, all right, which bone is it? Left or right, like this. And I'm thinking, if my patient looks like this, I am in trouble. I had taken anatomy and physiology in massage school, and we did our identification on bodies. And I could answer the question, but it still just felt
It
very
was,
strange.
and my question was kind of tongue in cheek because I know that there isn't necessarily. I mean, we throw that word around a lot. Everybody talks about their energy and their chi. I don't know if they use that word, but I think people are starting to come around, but at least we're starting to bridge the gap that there is a bigger picture here.
Right. So Chinese medicine is holistic in that it doesn't separate it out. Early on in the efforts to translate Chinese texts to European languages and English, they really struggled with this. Right, because they didn't have the Western language doesn't have an equivalent. Right. So, what is the Western equivalent? There isn't. That's what it comes down to. That's why we still use the word qi. So, in school, we spend a ton of time delving into that concept of qi and how you can't talk about qi without talking about yin and yang.
Correct.
Right? So, yin is the substance. It is the fluid of our bodies, right? It is liquid, it is cool. And then yang is the heat and the movement behind it, right? Everything about yin and yang is relative, right? Yin and yang are relative. They also transform into each other,
Right. So
right?
yin becomes yang, yang, because if you have an imbalance of yin, you can become more yang, right?
Right. Somebody who has a high fever, so they're in a very yang state, right? They have this excess heat. And then if it goes too far, they can convert into a shock state, and then their body becomes cold and clammy, right? And
Again.
so they're reverting into a yin state.
So is that sort of a checks and balances for the body?
Yes, if it's corrected.
Yeah.
But it's just that dynamic interplay between our substance and that which makes us alive, right? The definition of death in Chinese medicine is the separation of yin and yang.
Oh, interesting. I thought they would say the non-existence of qi. Okay.
Nope, it's the yin and
Separation of yin and yang is so interesting. So we seek to balance yin and yang.
yang. Yin and
And
yang.
so it's interesting because food has an energy, right? There's food
Right.
that creates more yin.
Thank you for bringing up food.
Yeah.
Right? More warming fruit higher up in the tree, right? That's yang, right? Yang actually
So cool.
translates in the Chinese pictograph is the sunny side of the hill.
I love that.
And then yin, right, are like our root vegetables.
Right,
They're
right.
planted in the earth. They're in the dark. They do better
Right.
in the dark. They're still and they're slow. So there's all these qualities of yin and all these qualities of yang. This is just through the observation of nature, right? Over
Very intuitive.
very intuitive and very nature-based. And because the Chinese speak in pictures, they were using very much the language of nature and what they saw around them when they were describing the body and pathology. The five pathogens are damp, heat, dryness,
Roughness.
phlegm, right? Hot, cold, damp, dry, and wind. Right? So they're using the language. It's quite a rabbit hole
It is, but
because
I
it's
think,
circular, so it will just keep going.
right, in other traditions, but I think I learned it mostly from practicing. Come on, what is it, guys? Oh, God. I learned about the energy of food and seasonality, seasonal, regional
Macrobiotics.
macrobiotics. Thank you. So,
It
seasonal
originated in Japan, I believe.
macrobiotics did.
The concepts of macrobiotics.
The idea of traditional
Same roots.
Chinese medicine. And, if it can't get to your door on the back of a mule, you shouldn't be eating it. So
Right.
in winter, you should not be eating pineapples. Maybe we've adapted a bit because, pineapples have a lot of good medicinal qualities, but for the most part, it's about what was growing at the time on the top of the tree. What's, in the wintertime, all you have is the root vegetables because the oranges and the lemons and everything have gone by. So it's very intuitive if you follow nature and keeping your body balanced. So in wintertime, you want to be eating something that supports your groundedness. I just think it's so fascinating. And we in America still do not practice, doctors do not practice diet. They send you to a dietitian. Maybe you go to a dietitian because you want to lose weight, but a doctor doesn't say, okay, you need to do this for your chronic indigestion or whatever. The first thing would be to go to diet, right?
Yes, and it's wonderful to read in the classics where they're discussing the, how people are drinking too much alcohol and eating too fast. And they were already talking about the influence of lifestyle on health hundreds and hundreds of years ago. There's a book written by Dr. Brendan Kelly, who's an acupuncturist in Burlington, Vermont. Yeah, Dr. Brendan Kelly is an acupuncturist in Burlington at Jade Mountain Wellness, and he wrote a book, and I'm looking for the title, but he and I'm reading off his website, writes and teaches about the connection between personal, societal, and environmental well-being. Here it is. It's the yin and yang of climate crisis, healing personal, cultural, and ecological imbalance within Chinese medicine.
Love
And
it.
in that book, what he does is talk about how we as a society are getting hotter, right? And so we're moving faster. We are eating more processed, so heat-producing foods. We are taking in vast amounts of more information at a faster pace. Everything around us is more vivid, right? And all of this is heating. And so he talks about that, relates it to the climate disruption, but also to our individual health. So I do a lot of cooling in my practice.
You fight. Well, and so, yeah, exactly. I mean, I have always said we could solve climate change like that if we changed our energy. I mean, why do we separate? And this is the problem, is we have separated our bodies from our planet, from what gives us life. We have completely separated and said we can control the earth so that it's more convenient for us to have what we want. So I would love to read that book because it's so true. The earth is responding to us. And a lot of people talk now, the big thing is grounding, is going out and putting your feet on the ground. And the other day I was having a bad day and I just couldn't stop my mind going and I was just kind of spinning and I went outside and it was cold. Ground is still frozen here. Took my socks off and I'm standing there with my feet in the ground and I could feel the difference. I could feel my body just sinking. And at first I thought, oh my God, I'm going to get so cold, but it felt so good to do that.
And so we keep in the West, we just keep coming up with things. We're like, oh, it's earthing. What a great
Right.
therapy. Let's make a product and then we'll sell it on the internet and people will buy it to ground themselves, right? And
Exactly. But at least we're going in that direction, right?
yes, and
Seeking alternative is what I'm talking about.
right. So just a little bit about my background. My father was a back to the lander.
Hey.
So at a very young age, when he was 25 and I was 4 and he was turning 25, he started down this path of really rejecting the direction of modern society. And it was quite the movement. I've been recently reading a book about it in terms of how many people were involved in it and what it was like. It wasn't a movement like the civil rights movement that was lobbying for changes. It was individuals just making the choice that they were going back to the land. They were going to try to be self-sufficient off the land.
And
And
was that back in the 70s, you would say?
so this was, 74, 75. And the more I have explored it and thought about it, and in reading this book, I don't see that it's reproducible now. Like
What?
they were able to, work for a week, save up the money, barter for fish, harvest off their land, and then go to the hardware store and they'd buy the door. And then the hardware store would front them the window,
Yeah, right.
and then they're slowly building this house. I actually had a client who came to me for an injury related to their first effort at hunting, and they were describing to me looking up on YouTube how to butcher a deer,
Wow.
which just
Yeah.
seems like such a weird conundrum to me, right?
But I have to say, in because I'm going to be 70 in a few weeks. So I was back then, and I have watched. So the 50s, we were, we started to rebel, right? 50s was like Elvis Presley. The 60s, we became flower children, became children of the earth. We were, that was our movement. And then in the 70s, flower child was still there. In the 80s, we started turning the corner. We were getting more. The children of the parents react to the parents, right? If the parents were hippies, the next generation was like, I am not doing that. The 80s was producing these kids that were like,
Go work on Wall Street.
a capitalism. I do see now that people are, it takes a sledgehammer on us to make people go, oh, wait a minute, this isn't working. We need to find a better way. And they always do. In my experience, the pattern is they start turning back to the earth. And I agree that maybe it's not reproducible as it was, but it's reproducible in a new way. We have to embrace, at least they're YouTubing how to dress a deer as opposed to how to do their nails, right? But I'd like to get into, there's one more question I want to talk about, which fascinates me, is the traditional Chinese medicine body clock. So, 1 a.m. to 3 a.m., your lungs are, is it your lungs or your liver is,
1 to 3 a.m. is the peak of liver.
yeah, your liver is processing, right? And that just is really, we could do a whole podcast on that, but it's so fascinating that the body has a clock.
So let me give this some context, right? We do know we have the language of circadian rhythm. We know that our hormones run in cycles, right? Based on time of day. We know that's why night shifts are really damaging over time.
When we talk about hormones, some people don't know this, but hormones are the neurotransmitters, right?
Yes, it's all the hormones, not
It's
just male or female. It's the biochemical communication that happens in.
what excites you and what calms you down.
And then also what regulates systems, right? Like thyroid and metabolism or adrenal glands for your wake and sleep cycles and things like that. When we talk about channels, meridians, they've been named after organs. And it's not actually just so we have these start points and we have these end points. In the West, we've numbered them for the sake of trying to learn them because the Chinese language is a challenge. But in fact, the flow, and I will use the word qi here, the flow of qi goes through those channels in a continuous circuit, right? So it's going from one channel to the next through, and then it's passing through all the channels and then coming back to the beginning again over the course of a 24-hour period. Right. And so, you know, when I was first learning them, you think about it like, you waking up around 5 a.m., you take a deep breath, you get up, you move your bowels, that's large intestine, you have something to eat, right? You digest it. By around noon, you're at the peak of activity, and that's heart, right? And then heart moves on to small intestine and bladder. And then towards the evening, you're getting into kidney. Pericardium, triple warmer, you come around early morning liver. So it's that cycle does fit pretty well with the sort of peak activities of what we're doing at that time. If you were following natural cycles, not 9 to 5 schedules or right shifts, nothing man-made.
But if you block that flow by, like you say, the graveyard shift or other things that block that flow, that's where you get disease.
That's where you get imbalance. Yes.
Balance.
Yep. I'll give you an example. I was a donor to my son of a piece of my liver because at the age of 5, he had acute fulminant hepatitis and his liver was gone. So, you know, Western modern miracle, they transplanted a piece of my liver into my son. And so peak liver time, like you said, is between 1 and 3 a.m., which means that naturally the lowest point for the liver is the opposite time, is 1 to 3 in the afternoon. And we do know that like a lot of blood flows into the liver during rest when we sleep. It's the other reason that they say if you're going to be up late, don't stay up past midnight because you really need that liver time to regenerate. So after I did the transplant and while I was in recovery for 2 to 3 weeks afterwards, at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, my eyes would roll back in my head and I could not stay awake.
Interesting.
I just had to go lie down.
Yeah.
And then one day that lifted. That changed. And they, what the doctors had said was, we're going to take this portion of your liver, and then your liver, what's left, will regenerate and grow to your metabolic need. And that's exactly what it felt like, is
That's so cool.
it was depleted so much. And then
It was regenerating. And so it's interesting because I know we got to start wrapping it up. There's so much to talk about. But so when during menopause, I found, because women of going through the same thing, we all talked and it's like 3 a.m., call me because I'm up, right? I am up at 3 o'clock. And it was really fascinating that we were all going, yeah, 3 o'clock. And we could go into that, but I for the sake of time, I have some other questions. But it's interesting because at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I get up early. I'm a early riser. I go to bed early, but around 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I either want a sweet, or I want, or you know, I d just need to sort of chill out and lie down. So it's interesting if we listen to our bodies and give our bodies that important knowledge or connection, saying, I hear you and I'm going to help you. So, Mitya, I just wanted to get in a little bit. Okay. So I want to, you know, one of the purposes of this podcast is to the people that are starting that have had it with traditional medicine. You know, they
Convention, like Western
conventional, I'm
conventional
sorry,
medicine.
mainstream. Yeah. You know, they've had this problem. I kept going to the doctor. I was feeling lousy, feeling lousy, feeling lousy. And he's like, here, try this, try that. The last resort was take an antidepressant, which I did. And it sent me off the deep end. I took it and I'm like, no, never doing that again. And I got so frustrated that I turn to alternative. I started learning about alternative healing. And now, with acupuncture now being actually Medicare insurance will cover, which I think is an important note that the mainstream medicine is starting to recognize it as something that works, that should be recognized. But there are still a lot of people out there that kind of go, oh, I'm afraid of needles, or yeah, but what's that going to help me with? I remember when my first introduction to a chiropractor, my husband at the time was going for his back. He had a really bad back. And he said, oh, you got to go see this guy. You got to see him. And I said, I'm fine. I don't have any back problems. I went to see him eventually, and he became my whole care provider because he was holistic and everything. So, what would you say to people who are peering around, peering through the door and saying, I don't know about this, but what can you do for me? You know, why would, that a question that you can understand?
Yeah, I have so many responses to
Okay.
that. A lot of my clients are people who go to their Western doctor and they're told, your labs are fine, the tests were fine, or we found a few of these things. It could be, it might not be, but you're otherwise fine. And we don't really have anything to offer you except for maybe a trial of some medication. And they're like, they're telling me I'm fine. Or they can't do anything, what can you do? My scope of practice, by definition, the state of New Hampshire, Vermont, California, is that I can treat anything except cancer. But of course, I can treat, you know, the effects of chemotherapy and radiation, and I can just treat people for what they present with.
Symptoms.
So, and I'm, it's not that I'm trying ever, that my mindset is that I can treat any Western diagnosis, right? I'm not treating Western diagnoses. I'm
Right.
treating Chinese medicine diagnoses or patterns, and everybody has a pattern. So the stranger the symptoms that people tell me, the better.
Yeah, right.
Right? Because it's based on an observation of humanity. The medicine is really based on that. I love that I don't have to turn anybody away. I'm a registered nurse. I worked in Western medicine in the hospitals for 2 decades. And I ultimately wanted to be involved at a level of medicine where my patients went home feeling better. And that I was not getting that as a profession, as a practitioner, as a nurse, that was not happening. Western medicine does a great job of keeping people alive and not as good a job at helping them be well. Let's put it
Yeah.
that. And some of the things that they do are miraculous.
Absolutely.
And sometimes I'm talking people into Western treatment.
Yeah.
honestly.
Well, I think some people are not ready for alternative measures.
Or they've had a negative experience of Western medicine and are rejecting it wholeheartedly. And I'm like, no, you really need to get your blood pressure down. And that would take me weeks to months to do with acupuncture and herbs. And really, you should take the medication and we can work towards you coming down off of it. You need to protect your heart.
Well, and it's a crisis situation when it's, and it's hard to get people to, when they're so used to mainstream medicine and taking a pill for everything, it's hard to adapt the concept of changing their lifestyle, changing their diet. I have people that I coach and I say, you got to eliminate wheat, dairy. And they're like, oh, I can do that, but I'm not giving up my cheese. I could never give up my cheese. One thing that I love about you, Mitya, is that you are such a healer in the sense of when somebody walks into your office, you are so non-judgmental, so welcoming, so tell me your story. And you elicit people's comfort. Because whenever somebody is seeking out a doctor, they're looking for the doctor to say, it's okay, I gotcha, right? You go into a traditional doctor, you wait in the waiting room for an hour past your appointment time because they're so overwhelmed. You have 15 minutes and they sit there with a chart and they go, okay, so how's your blood? Da 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 da. And okay, we'll see you next month. For test results or whatever. And if you have an acute situation, you can't get in to see them for weeks unless you go through the emergency room. So my point is, but it's also very, when I go in, because I'm on Medicare now, and so I have to have an annual exam to comply. And I get the look down the nose when, what medications are you on? I'm not. What do you mean you're not on med? You're 70 years old. You're not on any medications. I do acupuncture. Yeah, but that's not going to help, blah, 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 blah. Right. So there's a lot of, I don't like going there because it feels very antiseptic. It feels very judgmental. And I don't mean to, demonize tradition mainstream medical, but there's just such a long way to go. And what I love about you is how welcoming you are, how holistic you are. People walk in and you get their whole story.
And that's what I love about practicing this medicine. When I was looking at doing an advanced degree, building off of my bachelor's in nursing, and I would look at advanced practice nursing or other possible avenues, even looking at the curriculum was depressing to me. And then I started reading about the Chinese medicine curriculum, and I got so excited. And that joy, that excitement has not left me at all after years of practice. I love being able to offer help. And it's not that I can help everybody, nobody can. I acknowledge my limits and the limits of my medicine, but at least it does feel that I can provide a safe landing place for people to even talk through what's helpful and what's not, try to figure out what's going on. I mean, sometimes people come to me with test results and they don't know what it means, even after having a follow-up visit with their doctor. Like you said, it's so rushed.
You feel like you just don't want to take up their time.
There's some statistic about how physicians, on average, interrupt their patients every 7 seconds.
Wow. Well, I had a friend of mine who comes to see you, and she wrote me a text the other day. She said, I just want to thank you so, so very much for the introduction to such a beautiful woman, such an amazing healer. And you know who it was. I think you know who it was.
Thank you so much. I feel really blessed that I was able to find this pathway that allows me that space, that I can create. I mean, there are hardly any solo practitioners of medical doctors anymore. They've been consumed by the system,
Special and specialized. Everybody's
and
going to
specialized. Right. And they don't like it either. It's a systematic issue that needs to be changed on a systematic level. And you asked me about acceptance, and I did say on an individual level, as a practitioner, I have plenty of work. There are not enough acupuncturists or Chinese medical doctors. There's, I don't know, 50,000 in the United States.
Wow.
So,
Compared to how many physicians.
right. And they even say there aren't enough physicians,
Right.
to meet all the demands. So there's plenty of business, so to speak, for me. I wanted to get back to what you said about Medicare, just for our listeners. Medicare right now only covers acupuncture, just acupuncture, for low back pain.
Right.
And you have to have an MD's license or be under an MD's license in order to do that acupuncture.
Oh, okay.
And the reason is that on a federal level, acupuncturists are tucked in under ancillary. And this happened way back in the 70s, just as we were getting introduced. And so, like a physical therapist or anybody else who requires a doctor's order, right? On a state-to-state level, we are individual practitioners. So don't get too excited if you hear Medicare covers acupuncture.
My point was just at least it's being recognized,
Yes.
whereas before it was like, we're not even going to talk about them because they're
No, absolutely. The research is there. American Academy of Physicians, I hope I've got that right. They recommend acupuncture as a first-line treatment for pain. And this came out of the whole opioid crisis because they were like, okay, if we can't use the drug, what are we going to offer? MDs don't recommend acupuncture simply because they haven't experienced it. They don't know anybody. They don't know who to refer to. But I have at this point, in a fairly short period of time practicing in this area, 3, 4 years, I have probably five or six physicians who refer to me pretty regularly.
Wow, that's awesome. Well, Mitya, I'm afraid we have to wrap it up. I have one more question for you. What would be your wish for people, for humanity? What would be your wish if you had a wish that big?
There is a model of a medical space that incorporates primary care physicians, nurse practitioners, providers, right? With nutritionists, acupuncturists, chiropractors, physical therapists, right? Massage therapists within one space. So you might have your entry point be, some neck pain. You go to the chiropractor recognizes some nutritional deficiencies, sends you, right? And it becomes your team, it becomes your network. And I would just love that to be a model of medicine all over our country.
But anyway.
Think that so many practitioners would love that. Like, I've been taught by scalp acupuncturists. They practice in Israel in a physical therapist's office. So when they have somebody who's undergoing stroke recovery, they can put the needles in and then have the person go through the motions to stimulate the brain while the needles are in, and then the acupuncturist will remove them. But that kind of teamwork just makes these modalities that much more potent.
Absolutely. It's called collaboration.
Collaboration, right? Collective healing.
Well, Mitya, thank you so much for this time today. It was fascinating. You are such a gift to this planet, and I so appreciate you. I am one of your patients, I can say it. And I just want to keep coming back.
Well, As are you, Margie, and Brooke, it's been a delight to talk to you, and I really appreciate what you're doing to let other people know what's available out there and not
Well,
to be afraid of it.
hopefully you will be able to be on our panel so that we can bring together a group of you to discuss more about holistic healing and how we can heal the planet and ourselves. So, Mitya, how do people find you?
I have a website, Connecticut River Valley Acupuncture. So it's crvacupuncture.com. And I also have live reception from 10 to 6 weekdays. So you can always call 802-745-8898. And my lovely receptionists will help you get an appointment. And I do free 15-minute phone consultations to anybody who has questions about how acupuncture might help them, or questions about my practice and what I do. I also do non-needle treatments. I can do cupping, gua sha. I have tricks. I have lots of tools up my sleeve. If somebody is feeling really uncomfortable about starting off with the needles, I also treat pediatrics, so it's very much a I would call my practice a family practice.
Well, and I can tell you it doesn't hurt. Well, thank you again.
Yep.
We'll see you soon. Thanks for joining us on Holistic Wisdom. Help us grow this community by subscribing and leaving a review. Your support helps others discover these rich conversations. Until next time, stay curious, stay healthy, and keep connected.